Today, March 29th, is National Vietnam Veterans Day. I'm a Vietnam vet myself. This is a very special day for all of us who serve. We should never forget the sacrifices Vietnam veterans made for this country. 58,220 Americans lost their lives in that war. And many of us came back with scars. Scars that you can't see. Today is dedicated to the ones we lost and the ones who were lucky enough to come home. Welcome home.
Welcome to Your Next Mission podcast with the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army and co-founder of the American Freedom Foundation, Jack L. Tilley.
Hello out there, warriors, past and present, and your families, and thank you for your service to our great country. Welcome to Season 3 of Your Next Mission Video Podcast, a program initiative of the American Freedom Foundation. I'm Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army. I always love saying that, and your host. Now, before we get started, I want to personally thank our presenting sponsors, Calvary Agency, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue University Global, and Veterans United Home Loans for making Your Next Mission happen. They love their veterans and families, and we certainly love them too. We have a great show for you today. In fact, we have a wonderful show for you today. Over the course of our shows, we've addressed a wide range of topics, including some extraordinary stories about war. Well, today we have something very special that will take us deep into the history of our military during a time of extreme conflict, the Vietnam War. And I'm excited to introduce Chief Warrant Officer, retired, Mark McGregor, veteran and HAL 3 U.S. Navy Sea Wolf. Welcome to the show. So good to have you on the show.
Thank you, Sergeant Major. It's good to be with you.
I appreciate that. Before we get into talking about all the wonderful things that you've done and seen, can you tell the audience a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I was born and raised in Texas and didn't exactly have a stellar high school career, but I went off to college after high school anyway. And after a couple of years in college, it became apparent to me that that wasn't really a direction that was going to work out well for me. So with the draft hanging over my head, I turned around and enlisted in the Navy. And the Navy gave me some direction to go in, spent 21 years. Eventually, over the course of that time, while I was on shore duty, I was able to get my bachelor's degree, which led me to a 20-year career in public education after I retired from the military.
Well, you know, that first part right there, I see we have a lot in common, but because I didn't have a stellar career in school either, but, that's probably why they took me in the Army, because they didn't know what else to do with me anyway. So, Chief, the Sea Wolves have a unique and extraordinary history. Please tell us about your time in the military, a little bit about, the history of the Sea Wolves.
Well, I joined the Navy in 1967, and the Navy was attractive to me because their recruiting motto was join the Navy and see the world. So I figured that was good for me. So I enlisted and trained as an aviation ordnanceman, and then ended up spending most of my first enlistment on shore duty. And most of it was in San Diego, which is not a bad place to have to be if you got to be on shore duty. Yeah. I kept, over the course of the 4 years, I would some opportunity would come up and I would try to terminate my shore duty. And I was always told that the needs of the Navy were going to keep me right where I was. So after my first enlistment was getting to a close, I decided I wanted to see what Vietnam was all about personally. So I re-enlisted for orders to HAL 3, which was the Navy's only armed helicopter gunship squadron at the time, and their job, their mission was primarily to support the riverine forces in Vietnam, the patrol boats and the SEALs, and so I enlisted for that. The Navy didn't have any helicopter gunships, so we had to borrow those from the Army, and the Army also provided all the training for the pilots, the door gunners, and the maintenance personnel.
Yeah. You know, it's known that the Sea Wolves are the most decorated Navy squadron in Vietnam War, and actually in naval aviation history. Can you tell us a little bit about the, you know, story that exemplifies the bravery, courage, and heroism that you witnessed from, you know, from your fellow Sea Wolves?
Well, sure, but the one story that always sticks out in my mind is we had five Sea Wolves were awarded the Navy Cross over the period of time the squadron was in existence. Two of those were enlisted guys, and one of them was Norm Staton. And I can think I can talk about Norm because he won't be embarrassed since he passed away a couple of years ago. But Norm was flying as a door gunner on a convoy escort. They were escorting some fuel barges up a canal to a remote base. And one of the fuel barges hit a mine. And then it was immediately hit by a couple of rockets from the shoreline. And of course, all the fuel then, about 9,000 gallons of fuel, you know, turned into a fireball. And the canal was on fire. And Norm happened to look down from his door gunner position, and he saw that there was one of the crewmen was in the water, flailing around trying to get away from the flames and trying to get to the shoreline. And so Norm alerted the pilot to what was going on. The pilot went down low enough for Norm to jump in, and he grabbed the guy and was trying to take him to the shoreline, and he was taking fire from one shoreline, so he turned around and tried to go to the other one and was taking fire from that shoreline. So the helicopter came down and tried to pick him up, but the rotor wash was pushing them away. They couldn't get down low enough, plus they were taking fire at the same time. So finally, one of the and Norm was wounded, by the way. When he jumped out of the helicopter, he got hit almost immediately. So one of the boats in the convoy was able to get back through the flames and finally was able to pick him up. And for his actions, Norm was awarded the Navy Cross by President Nixon.
Oh, wow. You know, I think about helicopters. You know, we had two different missions here. You know, I was in an A Troop quarter cab, and I was in a squadron, cab squadron, really. And we had a ton of tanks and a ton of APCs. But, it's amazing the things that occur in war that you know, even though it's been a long time now, that you think about. In fact, I don't know, was you there during the Tet Offensive? I guess you was too, wasn't it?
No, I didn't get over there until 71.
Yeah.
So I missed the Tet Offensive.
Yeah.
Every year at Tet, we all puckered up, but nothing ever really happened like 67, 68.
Yeah, 67, during the Tet Offensive, I was up in what they called Claymore Corners, but we come down, went into Saigon, and it was, I remember, I tell people all the time, there were so many bodies that they'd killed that you'd step over a body about every 3 or 4 feet, that they really, the military come in and napalm them, the only reason I'm telling you the story is because when you think about the heroism of people in the military, whether or not there's a sailor, an Air Force, or whatever service, there's people that do just extraordinary things in war. That you know, most of the country have no earthly idea about. I wish there was a way to better educate our country about the kind of things that go on. Hey, tell us about your brotherhood that you develop among your fellow warfighters, I guess.
Well, the squadron had approximately 2,600 men between 1966 and 1971. About 2,600 men cycled through the squadron. Yeah. So, and most of them probably like me, you know, they did their tour and then they went to another duty station or they went home and may or may not have stayed in contact with anybody they knew from the Sea Wolves. In fact, I was thinking the other day, I had gone to a command years later and I relieved another chief petty officer there. And he had been a Sea Wolf, but I didn't find that out until almost 20 years later after we had both retired from the Navy.
Oh, my God, yeah.
He didn't know I was a Sea Wolf. I didn't know he was a Sea Wolf. We never said anything about it. So, but anyway, sometime around 1987, some of the Sea Wolves that had stayed in contact managed to get together, and they formed the Sea Wolf Association, which is a fraternal organization. And so through the Sea Wolf Association, we've managed to pretty much contact all of the living Sea Wolves that are still alive. And we have a reunion every other year, And we have pretty much developed the camaraderie and the brotherhood that we had in Vietnam, but that probably lost it when we all left. So,
It's really funny. It's the relationship that you had with somebody that you was in combat with, or even in the military with. If you haven't talked to them, you know, in 10 years, you pick up a phone and talk to them, it's like you talked to them yesterday. So that's a that's a special relationship that'll certainly never go away. One of the things I was thinking about, how many are currently living of the Sea Wolves, you know, the association you have that was over there when you was there today?
I would say that probably maybe about two-thirds are still alive. We had 44 killed in action in Vietnam, and there's quite a number that have died, you know, after the tour was over sometime later on. But I'm guessing probably, I don't know the exact number, but I'm thinking probably maybe two-thirds of the folks, the 2,600. We had a Sea Wolf by the name of Dan Arnes, and he had access for a while to squadron records before they were sent put in storage. And he was able to construct a list of all the people that were in the squadron over those years. And so he put together that list for the association, and then he spent the ensuing years since the mid-1980s tracking people down and finding out if they're still alive, if they're in contact, encouraging them to join the association, and so on.
Yeah. The other day when we was talking, you know, for prep call for this, you told me that for each person in the Sea Wolves that passes away, you go to their funeral. Is that correct? Did I get that right?
No, the 44 that were killed in action, one of the things that I've put on my bucket list is to visit their graves and perform a little ceremony honoring them, leave a challenge coin, leave a little plaque with a little on cardstock with a little bit about them, what they did in Vietnam, how they died, and encouraging people to take the challenge coin if it's still there, and every time that they touch the challenge coin, to remember and say that person's name out loud so that he's not forgotten.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that, again, when we was talking the other day, that I thought about, it's amazing to me that all the lessons that we learned in Vietnam, that, you know, it's just, a you know, 300, you know, if it started there, it's going to come back again. Even mines in the roads and stuff like that, mines on the side of the water too, that we don't, a lot of times a history of things that occurred, I don't think we talk about it enough, and we don't use it enough in our training, I guess. I'm sure we used Vietnam during that period of time, but a lot of things that happened in Iraq and Afghanistan and all the rest, is not a whole lot of water, I guess, over there, but, well, I guess there is a lot of water, but a lot of things that happened over there, we didn't necessarily use the lessons that we learned from Vietnam. So I think it's sort of weird that we don't do that. Even for me, again, it's I'm moving on the road, things you see on the road, things you see in the trees, places that you put mines and stuff, how do you identify them, and a lot of those little small things, I think it's unusual anyway. I really find it amazing that the Sea Wolves were the only naval unit that had no home base back in the U.S. I know you got to answer that question. I have no idea about that. Why was that, I guess?
Well, the original air support for the riverboats and for the SEAL operations were actually carried out by an Army unit, the 145th Aviation Battalion, and they called it Operation Seawolf. And they had the logo painted on the nose of the helicopters that said Seawolf on it. So eventually it became obvious that we were going to need more than just the two gunship units that were flying off of a couple of Navy ships in the rivers over there. So Helicopter Combat Support Squadron 1 out of San Diego sent some detachments over to train with the Army and to learn how to be door gunners and learn on-the-job training about maintaining the gunships, because the Navy didn't have any helicopter gunships. So eventually they sent four detachments of two complete crews each, and they were flying primarily off ships, but some of them were flying from shore bases also. And then eventually those four detachments became the HAL 3, Helicopter Attack Light Squadron 3, and it was in commission from 1967 until 1972, when it stood down in Vietnam. So HAL 3 never had a home base in the United States. It was established and disestablished in Vietnam.
You know, I seen, when I was in Vietnam, I've seen helicopters do unbelievable things. I remember, you know, most of the time I spent, I was in the jungle most of the time, but I've seen helicopters come down, and I know they didn't do it, but I've seen them come down through, you know, those rubber plantations and stuff like that. It looked like they was almost cutting the tops of trees off to get down in there to pick somebody up if they had to get somebody up. So they did some extraordinary things. The other thing we talked a little bit about the other day about, we called it Puff the Magic Dragon. I guess it was a C-130 or something that had a minigun on it, and you'd see them shooting, what is it, every fifth round or every whatever. Every fifth round, I guess it is, but as a tracer, but it was like it was, you know, peeing out of the sky. And I think about every inch and a half of a football field, you'd see one of those rounds, or you could see a round hitting the ground. But incredible stuff that a lot of people have no earthly idea about. Vietnam, again, and I'm sure it's you, Vietnam made me grow up, and it made me look at things so much so much differently. That's what war does to you. That's a shame.
Exactly.
Yeah. We're talking with Mark Greger, Chief Petty Officer retired of U.S. Navy, a Vietnam War veteran, and a member of the famed HAL 3 Seawolves. And you're watching Your Next Mission video podcast with me, your host, Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army. And don't forget, if you're enjoying this discussion, please like us. Click on that subscribe button below. Chief, I understand that the Seawolves could be deployed at a moment's notice to support our ground forces in the Mekong Delta. I've been in the Mekong Delta in Vietnam. Do you have any stories you want to share with us about, you know, about some of those experiences?
Well, sure. You know, you were talking about Puff the Magic Dragon. We were, even though our primary mission, we had eight detachments of two helicopter gunships each, spread out around the Mekong Delta, and then one of our detachments had three gunships. But a couple of them flew off of Navy ships that were anchored in the rivers there, and the rest of us flew off of ground bases there. But we got a scramble one night on my detachment, and there was a special forces outpost that was up near the Cambodian border that was training indigenous troops to infiltrate across the border into Cambodia to try to block the Ho Chi Minh Trail, or at least to provide some disruption there. And so we got scrambled up there, and by the time we got up there, within minutes, probably less than 20 minutes to get up there, we made contact with the advisors on the ground, and they told us they were hunkered down in the bunkers because we could see that the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese were in the wire. And they were, you know, getting into the compound. And so they told us, they said, you're cleared to fire on anything you see out there. And that was truly, for me, that was the first time that I had ever actually seen people that I was shooting at. You know, the rest of the time they were in bunkers, they were in tree lines, someplace where you could see the tracers coming out, but you couldn't see them. And usually what would happen is we'd be the first on the scene. And then finally, some fixed-wing aircraft would show up and carrying a lot more ordnance than we could carry because we just had rockets and door guns. And so the first fixed-wing aircraft on the scene happened to be a Puff the Magic Dragon flown by a Vietnamese Air Force crew. And they lit the place up with their xenon light. And we pulled off station, and they cut loose with those miniguns. They had three on each side. It was the original version, the AC-47, before they moved to the C-130s and the C-119s. And they cut loose with those things, and I could see, I turned around and looked, we were heading back to the base to rearm and refuel. And I could just see what you're talking about. They were just ripping the ground up throughout that whole compound. The one thing that was different about this particular strike for us was, typically when we would put in a strike, we would launch rockets first and then go into a wagon wheel and fire the door guns at whatever the target was. But because this was an actual base, we really couldn't do the rockets because we didn't want to tear their defenses up any more than we had to. So this was strictly a door gun battle with the troops on the ground and with our door gunners. But we got back to our base to rearm and refuel, and then we were told to stand down. We were told there were there were no more bad guys trying to get onto the compound.
Yeah, you know, you made me think of a couple funny stories real quick. Is they call it a night run, and we was running the road, and we was down in, just outside of Saigon. Then this is a show of force. We had a cab unit. I think it was about six vehicles. We'd have a night run, and so we was doing a night run, and all of a sudden the front vehicle stopped. And we were sort of the third vehicle in a row, and all of a sudden we start getting shot at, and you've heard a 50 caliber fire, and we hear a 50 fire, and it's going, you know, the bump 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 bump, rounds are coming off, and the rounds are hitting the tank that I'm on, and so the guy that was a TC says, hey, Tilly, let's shoot. I said, wait a minute, don't shoot. And he said, why? I said, there's no way that a Viet Cong's going to be carrying a 50 caliber with him fighting us. I mean, something's wrong. We're in the wrong spot here. So he turned around and he looked behind him. And he says, hey, everybody's backing out. So we all backed out of that. And to the Viet Cong's, I guess, to their strategy, what they did was they shot at small arms. And there was another compound, Vietnam compound, that wasn't too far away. We couldn't see it. And that compound was shooting at us. So we was actually fired at the good guys. So it's crazy, but it's... I got a ton of stories, probably all you do too, but you know, again, it's those kind of things that we ought to do as much as we can to share those experiences with other Americans. And I'm so, again, I'm so proud of you to meet you for the second time now, but to call you a friend, and I appreciate all that you've done and all that you continue to do for our veterans and their families. We got a lot more to talk about, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. You're watching Your Next Mission video podcast.
You're watching Your Next Mission, proudly presented by the Cavalry Agency. They help brands dominate no matter their size. Ideas, strategy, action. This is Cavalry. Learn more at cavalry.com. Navy Federal Credit Union, the most trusted credit union owned by members of the military community, serving all branches of the armed forces and their families. Their members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Purdue Global, providing affordable online education for hardworking adults. Learn more about a personalized, innovative, and world-class education at PurdueGlobal.edu. Veterans United Home Loans, the number one VA lender for five straight years. If you're buying, they're funding your dreams. Learn more at veteransunited.com. Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Welcome back. We're blessed to be here today with Chief Petty Officer retired Mark McGregor, a Vietnam War veteran, and a member of the famed HAL 3 Seawolves. I want all of our viewers to reach out to me directly. Tell us about your transition. Tell us what topics you'd like to cover. I always tell people it's not my show, it's our show. You can call or text me at 844-424-1134, and I'll reach back out to you. Or send me an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org. We're heading into our final segment with you today, and I hope you enjoyed just as much as I have. I just really have a couple more questions. Recently, I watched a movie, and it was called Scramble, the Seawolves. It really shows the heroism of not only the pilots and the door gunners, but, you know, the mechanics and the ground support people. Can you talk about that?
Sure. You can also put in a plug here that there are a lot of PBS stations around the country where you can stream Scramble the Seawolves.
Oh, wow.
Or you can purchase your own DVD Blu-ray copy. So. From ScrambleTheSeawolves.org, or .com, rather. You know, Sergeant Major, and I know you already know this, but you can have the greatest pilots in the world, you can have the greatest door gunners in the world, but if those planes aren't flyable, that's not going to do you any good. And our people, the Hueys we got were mainly the older B models from the Army as they were transitioning to better Hueys, bigger engines, better rotor heads and things like that. So sometimes those Hueys were in pretty bad shape when we got them.
Yeah.
And those maintainers worked miracles getting those things and keeping them flying. I was always amazed. I started out on a maintenance track and then worked my way over to become a door gunner. So I have a special appreciation for what they had to go through. We were trained by the Army generally. I got my training at the Aberdeen Proving Grounds. And, you know, if those maintainers weren't doing their job or didn't do a great job, you know, on a completely new platform for all of them, the Navy had Hueys, but they didn't have gunships. And so this was a pretty remarkable feat. And I owe my existence to those guys, I'll tell you.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was talking a little while ago to somebody, and I said, you know, everywhere I've ever been, there's two people you want to make, well, probably a lot of people want to make mad. But one of them was I didn't want to make a cook mad because he was going to have to feed me. And the other one, I didn't want to make a mechanic or somebody maintaining my vehicle mad because I want to make sure it ran and got to where I was going. And so anybody associated with that old tank that I was on, I want to make sure it's good. I do have another helicopter story. This is in Europe years ago, and I was in a helicopter, and it was a UE. So the general I was working with says, "Hey, Sergeant Major, would you take the vehicle back to our base camp?" And I said, "Sure, I got it." And so I got in a flight, and when I got in a helicopter, and we started to take off. Just before we took off, one of the guys on the pilot of the helicopter says, "Hey, look, I got a relative that's a sergeant first class that I'd like to get assigned to your division, or the division over here." And I said, "Sure, maybe, okay, thank you, I got it." So, you know, and I got it, but I wasn't, you know, I'm not sure I could have helped him out. So anyway, we come up, we took off, we banked a little bit, and the engine blew. It only had one engine. And we're at about 3,000 feet. And so this guy, there's an old pilot, I'll never forget, the old pilot and the young pilot. And the young pilot says, "Hey, you know," they just real casual about talking about it. They say, "Hey, you better take this one." And the old pilot says, "Okay, I'll take it." And they come down to probably about 500 feet, and there was auto-rotating down at about 100 feet or 50 feet before they hit the ground, or before they came down the ground. They sort of slowed it down, set that tail down, and set on the ground. And then they told us to evacuate the helicopter. And so we all jumped out. We evacuated the helicopter. And when that pilot got off the helicopter, I walked up to him and said, "Hey, tell me the name of that guy you want to get assigned over here. I'm going to take care of him right now." It scared me half to death, that's for sure. Hey, the Sea Wolves have been a forgotten outfit over the years, and recently they were recognized in a really special way, an honor flight from San Diego. Can you talk about that and what exactly happened on that honor flight?
Sure. Honor flight started in 2005, and it was primarily to take World War II and then later Korean War veterans back to their memorials in D.C. And each honor flight hub is its own little independent, even though it's a national organization, it's its own little independent entity. And Honor Flight San Diego had a person working for them whose father was a Sea Wolf. And so when they decided to start taking Sea Wolves out of taking Vietnam veterans rather out of San Diego, she pushed to have the first flight be all Sea Wolves. So we were able to get 85 Sea Wolves from all over the United States to come to San Diego and get on that honor flight. It was a whirlwind weekend, I'll tell you. It started on Thursday evening when we all met for dinner at a hotel near the San Diego airport. And then early Friday morning, we were in a VIP lounge being served catered breakfast. People were cheering and shaking hands and seeing us off. When we flew into Baltimore, into BWI Airport, there were people there who were cheering as we came in and got off the plane. They took us to a Hilton nearby, and we stayed there for the weekend. On Saturday morning, we were up and going around touring the monuments. First place we went to was Arlington Cemetery to see the changing of the guard at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldiers. And that was very impressive. And they also did a couple of wreath layings while we were there, so we got to hang out and see that also. Went to the Vietnam Memorial, of course, went to the World War II Memorial, went to the Navy Yard, to the Navy Museum there. And just, you know, as we were driving through the D.C. area, the guides were pointing out stuff to us. Each one of the Sea Wolves was assigned a guardian, they called them. And the guardian, Ted, was my guardian, actually. And the guardians were there to make sure that you were able to access whatever the monuments or whatever we were doing Some of them, for the less mobile people, were pushing their wheelchairs around and just generally providing a great service for us. So it was a very moving experience when we got back to San Diego. Alaska Airlines flew a special plane into BWI to pick us up, and it was decorated in patriotic colors, and it said honoring those who served. It was stenciled on the side of it in big bold letters. When we got into both BWI and San Diego, we were met by crash crew fire trucks that were squirting their hoses up into the air. People on the ground were cheering and holding flags. We got off the plane in San Diego, and there were, Sergeant Major, there were over 1,000 people there in that airport terminal greeting us. There were veterans, there were scout troops, there were just people that had come down to do it. And I highly recommend it. A lot of Vietnam veterans complain that they weren't given any kind of welcome when they came home from Vietnam. If you want your welcome 50 years later, this is the way to do it.
Yeah.
You get on your local honor flight. Honorflight.org will tell you where the hubs are. Go to your local hub, sign up, and go.
You know, I was going to ask you what did you get out of it, but I think you've just answered that question. I mean, you got out, you know, the camaraderie. It's impressive when you see what our country does, and a lot of times we don't show people, like the airplane, the Alaskan air flight that you took, and what they did to recognize the veterans. I wish there was a way for us to show more people about that kind of patriotism. That kind of love of country, because there's a lot of people out there that love this country. They want to do everything they can for the country, and maybe it took them a long time to recognize your organization or your unit, but they did it. But sometimes, who knows why? But I just want to thank you for your service and thank you for all that you've done. And the other thing is, is there anything that we missed that you wanted to make sure you tell the crowd about, or the audience about, I didn't ask you about, or something you want to share with the audience about you, or anything that you've done, or something about the Sea Wolves?
I think you pretty well covered it. Sometimes people ask me, ever since the issuance of Scramble the Sea Wolves, the DVD, people have asked me, they'd say, well, was that a secret outfit? Nobody knew anything about it. And I'd go, no, it really wasn't a secret. It just, it was one squadron of many, but it was a unique squadron. And, some people on active duty didn't know about it, but, there'd be an article in the Navy Times or in All Hands Magazine occasionally about something that HAL 3 was doing. So it wasn't a secret, but, it was not well known until it started to become publicized, in recent years.
Yeah. A lot of times, I think the military wants to keep everything quiet because you got to worry about security and this other stuff. But as time goes on, we need to know about things like this. And again, I appreciate you, Chief. I appreciate all you do and all you continue to do. God bless you and your family. And thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Well, thank you, Sergeant Major, and I appreciate you having me today.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thanks to Chief Petty Officer Retired Mark McGregor for being with us today. I'm Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, and you've been watching Your Next Mission video podcast, and thank you for watching today. Please visit our website at yournextmission.org and leave me a review. I always say I hope it's a good review, but if it's a bad one, I can take that too. You can also visit our nonprofit partners there who can provide you with so many services that will assist you in your transition from the military. Also, please visit our corporate partners and see all the jobs that are available. Please know we want to assist you any way we can. And I'd like to say that again, please know we want to assist you any way we can. Please follow me on all my personal social media pages, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and LinkedIn, and Rumble. And if you enjoyed this discussion with Chief Gregor, please like us. Click on that subscribe button below. Don't forget, we want to hear from you. Please leave me a message or send me a text at 844-424-1134 or send me an email, smatilley@yournextmission.org. Thanks again to Chief Petty Officer Retired Mark McGregor. It was just great having you on the show. And at this point, it's always my final thoughts, and I just want to leave you with just a couple things. One is, when people go into military, they raise their hand and they said, protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. And what that means to all of you that listen, it means that I'm willing to die for your freedoms. I'm willing to give up my life so you can be free each and every day. And that's exactly what the men that went to Vietnam did. It was about us for our country. It was about fighting for things that a lot of times people have no idea what it's about. So don't forget, when you see a Vietnam veteran, tell them thank you and also tell them welcome home, because they was willing to die for you and for me. Again, thanks for watching, and thanks to Cloudcast Media, New Mind Studios, and of course, our four presenting sponsors, Calvert Agency, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue University Global, and Veterans United Home Loans. We appreciate all you do for our military. And as always, see you on the high ground. Hooah!
You've been listening to Your Next Mission, brought to you by the American Freedom Foundation. Learn more by visiting yournextmission.org.